Each generation is currently navigating a unique part of the retirement planning experience, with baby boomers preparing for the transition into retirement and the early half of Gen Z taking their initial steps into the career field. So over the next couple of episodes, Nathan and I are going to look at retirement questions that every generation should be or is asking themselves here on The Financial Answer.
Life is full of questions. It's full of twists, turns, and complex issues to try to figure out. You need answers. Welcome to The Financial Answer with Nathan O'Brien.
Hit it.
You'll hear us discuss the pitfalls and common investing mistakes we see people make and encourage you to think about solutions to some of the problems and question marks you might face in your own financial life. So let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. Nathan O'Brien and myself back once again to talk investing, finance, and retirement. And we're going to bust up our conversation here a little bit, looking at some generational questions that you might be asking depending on, well, which generation you're in. So yeah. Nathan and I are going to run through that a little bit this week on the show, next couple of weeks, actually, or next couple of episodes. So we're going to have a little fun with that. What's going on, my friend? How you doing?
Everything's great. Everything's good. I love this time of year. Spring is beautiful around here.
Spring is springing?
Yes, it is. We love it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's also, depending on where you're at, also brings the green season here where I'm at, which is the pine trees started dropping that green stuff everywhere.
Definitely allergies kick up this time
of
year,
for sure.
But I enjoy it. This is one of my favorite times of year in Tennessee.
There you go. That's good.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm just right across the border in North Carolina, so we're fairly shared climate, if you will.
That's right.
But listen, we're going to talk about your age bracket here first. We're going to talk about the boomers. Wait.
Nice. Okay. That was a good intro to that.
I'm just teasing. But you know, first of all, I got to say this. We can't seem to keep this straight as to what we are, it seems like, except for the boomers, because they keep shifting these number brackets around.
It depends on which day you Google it.
It really does. Like right here on the notes we're using, it's talking about Gen X, you know, stopping at 1976. It's only an 11-year window. And I was like, wait a minute, I thought a generation was 20 years.
Yeah, that's right.
And I've heard that it's up to 1980 or 1982. Yeah.
There's no way I'm a millennial. I was born in 78. There's no way I'm a millennial.
It says you are, according to this current thing. But,
no way.
Which is hilarious. But we're gonna start this episode with the boomers. You know, the baby boomers. And unfortunately, that term has become a little derogatory, which is so weird because I was always used to referring to my, you know, I've got an older sister who actually is a baby boomer, even though I'm a Gen Xer.
Yeah.
Because she's 22 years older than I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, but a lot of times that this is for us is probably going to be our parents, right?
Right. Right.
So let's focus there on this episode. So right now it's currently saying 1945, 1946 to around 1965.
Yeah.
So if you're born in that age bracket, my brother's a boomer. He was born in 58. My sister, as I just mentioned, so on and so forth. So their golden years are certainly upon them or certainly right there at the door.
Right there. Yeah, that's right.
So let's look at a couple of questions that maybe help best prepare for that transition. I think we're still seeing some of these crazy numbers that come out, like, you know, 7,000-8,000 boomers retire a day. Globally, it's huge numbers, right? And so a couple of big questions that tend to pop up. How do I manage the risks of the market, you know, as I approach retirement? And certainly the last couple of years, that's been back on the table, because we had a nice long run where risk, everybody was okay with the risk because it was up and up and up.
Super comfortable. Yeah, super comfortable. Everybody's, you know, plugging in 12-15% a year in their retirement plans and all this stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Last three years, maybe not so much.
Not so much, yeah. That's true. So, you know, that's one thing that that I do really see sometimes, especially with this generation, is maybe because they are there, most of the time they're retired when I'm talking to them, but maybe not just yet. They're right before retirement. They come in, they have the conversation of, you know, that number, that nest egg number is not where I want it to be. So, you know, I've been really aggressive in my 401k recently, and I'm like, oh, that's the worst thing to do, because you just don't know. Unfortunately, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know when the market's going to tank and lose 20, 30, 50% like it did in 2008. So, you've got to be super careful with that and manage that risk as you get closer to retirement. So, you know, that last 5 years is extremely important. The last 5 years before entering retirement is extremely important. You don't want to have big losses, big volatility on the downside there with that. So that can really devastate your retirement, devastate your plan. So just be careful with that and be cautious about managing that volatility there.
Okay. How do we best approach the transition? I think that's the one that really people don't, I think they fear it and they think about it, but they don't know how to articulate it or until it's like literally at the door. And what I mean there is like, oh crap, I don't go to work next week.
That's right.
What do I do? No. How do I get this money, you know, or whatever?
Honestly, with that transition, one of the hardest things to get people to understand is you don't really have to save anymore. You know, so they take money out of their 401k or IRA on a monthly basis and they set it aside in a savings account at the bank, you know. And I'm like, why are you doing that? That doesn't make sense. So, you know, that's a hard transition from the accumulation phase to the spending phase or the distribution phase. And it's tough. It's tough for people mentally to do that because you've accumulated for so long, but it's necessary. So, you know, for most people, Social Security is not going to be enough. Pension, is, you know, most people don't have it. And so even with a pension. And so you've got to supplement that from your savings and investments, supplement your income there. So it's hard. It's hard to make that transition and do it, but you need to look at that, weigh the options, and just be careful about how you choose to do that. It's really important.
Yeah. Nathan, what steps can, you know, folks in this demographic take when addressing the healthcare costs, right? Because obviously that's way different for, I mean, I'm 52 and I've got healthcare issues. Obviously, most, you know, we all do. But when you're 52 versus my mom at 82, they're considerably different.
Right. They are for sure. And, you know, the good thing is Medicare is, it covers a lot of those costs. A Medicare supplement, those kind of things are going to cover a lot of those costs. But the big picture items like, you know, assisted living or long-term care expenses or things like that, those are items that Medicare does not cover. And for the most part, it doesn't cover that at all. So you've got to consider those things, plan for those things, because I mean, right now, I don't know, you know, how it is where you are, Mark, in North Carolina there, but right now, I mean, assisted livings are $5,000 a month here and nursing homes $8,000 or $9,000 a month. It's insane how expensive that is. And if you haven't done some proper planning on that, then that can be a major issue.
Yeah. And it's super costly, right? Some of this stuff, which again, terrifies people to the point where they just don't want to talk about it.
Right.
So, because like, well, I know I can't even afford it, so why bother?
Right.
You know.
And one of the things, too, that people fail to address a lot of times is Medicare doesn't cover dental, you know, or vision or things. And so those are things to consider. I mean, if you have to replace a tooth, it's $10,000. So it can be really expensive, a lot of cost there. So that's got to be addressed to some extent in your plan and make sure that that you've got some things covered there that normally happen to people, some of the routine things that happen.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, okay, so you find yourself in this, you know, approaching retirement or maybe even into it, right? Mm-hmm. What's the best way to pass on wealth, you know, to, you know, my heirs without sacrificing, and hopefully this is the healthy part, without sacrificing my own retirement, right? That's a good way to view it for sure. But again, that becomes that's a totally different question than you're going to have if you're a millennial like you, born in 1978.
I'll get you back for that.
That's a totally different question though, right? Because you're not thinking about, I know you are because you're a financial professional, you think about numbers, but you wouldn't normally be thinking about what you're going to leave to your daughter when you're 40 versus what you're going to leave to your daughter when you're 60.
Well, that's right. And that's something that, you know, not everybody has the goal of leaving that, you know, money to their kids or grandkids or whatever. Sometimes they want to leave the farm or the house or maybe nothing. I mean, they're like, my kids are doing great. They're doctors or whatever. So there's no worry there. They're doing better than I did. So it depends on your goals, what you're trying to accomplish. But if your goal is to leave money, there's a lot of things that you've got. I mean, IRAs now, because of the law change that happened in 2020, IRAs are super inefficient now to leave to heirs, to beneficiaries besides your spouse. You've got to liquidate those things within 10 years of death, and it can be super expensive. So, for example, if you have a, you know, if you were fortunate enough to have $1 million IRA or 401k, if you've saved well and done really good with that, and you've got $1 million in your 401k, your kids or whoever is going to receive that has to take about $100,000 out a year to meet the required distribution there for that. So that can be super expensive for them. The taxes can be really astronomical there. So you've got to plan for that and be careful about those things and make sure you address that before you pass, because there's a lot of things you can do now to make sure that that's much more efficient when it goes to your kids and grandkids.
Yeah, definitely. And we all want to be as efficient as possible from also a tax standpoint with that
yeah,
stuff too.
Yeah, definitely. Right? So. Yeah, I mean, nobody likes, I mean, I've never met anybody that likes to pay more taxes.
I have not met one person. And if you are out there listening, please raise your hand because we'd like to
meet you. Yeah, let me know. That's fine.
We'd like,
I'd like to meet somebody that says that.
We'd like to study you as a medical oddity.
That's right.
Just kidding. What are the best ways, well, speaking of taxes, what are the, because this gets taxed as well, what are the best ways to maximize my Social Security benefits for a more secure retirement versus just saying, I'm 62, give me.
Yeah, that's right. Get it right now. So very rarely. Does 62 the number, you know, for anyone when you should take Social Security? It can happen. There could be a chance of that being your best number, but for 99% of people, it's not. So you need to make sure you're doing what's best for you and your spouse or for your situation, what you're trying to accomplish. And most of the time, it's not 62. So the idea that, yeah, you know, I've paid into this my whole life, I'm going to draw it now at 62, that's a flawed mentality, I think. And so when you look at that long term, it hurts you. And it doesn't hurt by $10,000 or $20,000. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars that costs you over a standard life expectancy.
That's big money.
That's a lot. Yes, that's a lot of money. So make sure that you address that in your plan for what you are trying to accomplish, because it's important, and it's not no money. I mean, it's a lot of money that you're dealing with there. So make a good decision with that.
Let's see. Let's do one more. Downsizing or relocating.
Probably
has changed on the radar because of housing prices being anywhere from 50% to 500%. I mean, literally, I was looking at a house the other day, dude, and was looking at it from just 4 years ago or 5 years ago, from 2019. That's what it was. So 5 years ago.
Okay.
And it was up, and it was on Zillow or something, and it was up 312%.
Wow.
That's beyond mind-boggling. Right?
Wow. Was that your house?
Yeah, I wish, right? I'd sell that Joker in a heartbeat.
That's right.
But think about about that, though, right? Because we see that, and we're thinking, let's sell it and downsize or relocate, because we were thinking about it.
Yeah.
But what's it going to cost you to get what you want on the other side?
No.
So that's changed.
Right. That's exactly right. You know, what I'm seeing more of, I would say, is the client that, you know, bought the house 30 years ago, they paid in this area maybe $75,000 or $80,000, maybe $100,000 for their house 30 years ago, okay? They've held it this entire time, upkeep, maintenance, all that stuff. Now they're selling that same house for $350,000, $400,000, something like that. So it's a tremendous amount of equity that they're making from that, lots of revenue there. And they're able to buy, transition number one, to a smaller house, a new house that has a lot less maintenance, a lot less upkeep, things like that, for about the same money, you know. So it's a smaller house, but it's a newer house. So better insulation, better, all those kind of items and things that, you know, just weren't in a house 30 or 40 years ago that are today. So that's what I'm seeing more than anything. And it's typically not that people are going cheaper, because you really can't buy anything cheaper.
Yeah, true.
You know, most of the time it's you know, well, can I pull out $50,000 to finish this purchase or whatever? Mm-hmm. So it's the, you know, it's all the equity that you got plus maybe $50,000 or $60,000 or $100,000 or whatever to buy this new one. So it's good and it can be a benefit, but it's definitely slowed down, I would say, and it's kind of shifted on what people are doing versus what they were doing 5 years ago.
Well, and if it was on your radar, if it was on your plans to downsize into retirement, then at least still have, like, if you're seeing the current market situations and the interest rates and you're thinking, well, you know, heck with that, we're not doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You know, don't scrap it. Don't throw it out with the bathwater.
No, right? Baby, that's right. The
bathwater. At least talk your advisor and just kind of go, okay, what kind of options are we looking at here? Does this even make sense? Can we still think this through? Versus just kind of wholesale scrapping it just because we see the big scary numbers like that.
That's right. Don't let that mess up your goals and your wants. I mean, it may.
Just
it
rerun
may
do the numbers, that,
but address
right?
it. Yeah, yeah, address it and see if it's helpful or see if you can still do it. And, you know, there's always the option of a townhouse or a condo as well. And so those have no maintenance for the most part.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of things that people enjoy about that. So there's options. And so make sure you talk to your advisor before you take that step, take that leap, and move on from there.
All right. Well, there you go. So some questions to think about for baby boomers if you find yourself in that demographic. We're going to come back in our April episodes when we kick that off. We'll talk about maybe Gen X, and then maybe we'll get to Nathan's, you know, category of the millennials there after that.
I can't believe this says I'm a millennial.
It does. I said 1977, does it? That's crazy.
That's crazy.
I'm like, come on now. Wait a minute. That's it's because I swear it used to be Gen X. It was 65 to like 83.
Yeah.
And then it was like 83 to like 97 was millennials because my daughter was 97.
Yeah.
So they just kind of keep, I think they shift this stuff whenever they want to make the census tell
make
them.
Make their point.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really what happens.
But either way, we'll have some fun talking about some of these questions that you might be facing if you find yourself in that group. And we realize that a good portion of our audience is in this baby boomer category, but you know, you have kids that are our age, you have grandkids that are millennials or Gen Zers. So again, it could be a worthwhile conversation. So make sure you share the podcast with others who might benefit from it as well. And don't forget, you can find us at thefinancialanswer.com. That's thefinancialanswer.com. You can also type that into the search box on Apple or Spotify or YouTube and find it that way as well. And that's how you can subscribe. Nathan, thanks for hanging out, buddy.
Yeah, thank you. Good show today.
Yeah, good show for sure. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. We'll do some
more. Yes, absolutely.
Right here on The Financial Answer with Nathan O'Brien, registered investment advisor, chartered retirement planning counselor, and the founder at O'Brien & Associates. We'll see you next time.
O'Brien & Associates is a registered advisory firm in Tennessee. This show is intended for information and educational purposes only. Consult with a qualified advisor before taking any action.